don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Welcome to Education Nation, where every Saturday morning at 10:30, we grab our second cup of coffee and tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom, along with co-host Mark Durkin. School is now in session.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us here on Education Nation. I am your host, Rebecca Hagstrom, and it's always such a pleasure to be with our listening audience every Saturday morning. And I'm joined in studio once again by the producer of Education Nation and my co-host, Mark Durkin.
Good morning again, Rebecca.
Good
How are you?
Good morning. I am good. I'm very good. Looking forward to the warm weather of spring and summer.
Yes, me too.
We're
Gotta get
there.
The kids outside.
I know. We're getting there. Well, this morning, we want to pick up on a topic that we introduced to our listening audience a couple of weeks ago that's a point of real pain and frustration for parents and children alike. And these frustrations are enhanced by misconceptions and negative stereotypes that contradict the fact that learning disabilities are not a problem with learning motivation and intelligence. A different wiring of the brain simply affects how children and adults receive information.
Yeah, that's right, Rebecca. When discussing learning disabilities, as many as 17% of U.S. school children may have dyslexia. And of people with reading difficulties, anywhere from 70 to 80% likely to have some form of dyslexia. This is a very common learning disability, but the good news is there's a real hope, help, and tools to help students with dyslexia excel in the classroom. We briefly touched on dyslexia 2 weeks ago, but for the next two shows, we want to delve in and help our listeners understand what dyslexia is and isn't, the facts and myths surrounding it, how it affects learning, and the specific actions parents and teachers can take in helping their children thrive in their learning experiences. For these two shows, we have just the right guest joining us in studio who is making a huge impact in the lives of those living and learning with dyslexia.
Yes, we sure do. And we welcome again into our studio Sherilee Marsh. She is a learning specialist for students with dyslexia and helps students with their reading at Liberty Classical Academy. Sherilee also has a master's degree in special education and is trained in the Orton-Gillingham approach. Sherilee, welcome back to Education Nation.
Thank you. I am so honored to be here.
Good, good. Well, I think I was mentioning to you before the show that it's been great to get some feedback from some of our parents, Sherilee, that they're really enjoying hearing these shows on special education and just some of the learning disabilities. And so I think we probably have quite a few people listening today, getting ready to hear more about dyslexia. So the last time we were together, you briefly defined dyslexia. Would you please define for our listeners specifically, once again, what dyslexia is and isn't?
Sure, I can do that. It's a language-based learning disability, like we talked about. And with children, you'll see difficulties with fluent word recognition, decoding, reading, spelling, and writing, all those components that are so important in school. These difficulties typically result from a deficit in the phonological component of our language, which are the small parts of our language, the phonemes meaning the sounds that we use. It's often unexpected in comparison to other cognitive abilities of the student. Things just don't line up. They seem like they could do this, and then it's just so hard. And then students who, at a young age, show signs of dyslexia also have difficulties with spoken language, and that's another thing that you can pick up on in kids with dyslexia.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. And then when we talk about what it isn't, that is something else that I think there's a lot of misunderstanding of what dyslexia is and isn't.
Yep.
Can you comment at all about what it isn't, what some of the common misconceptions are?
Some of the myths that we have are this: people with dyslexia just see letters backwards and they write them backwards. And with that, people then think, well, can't we just train them to write them the other way, where it's a lot more complicated than that. The idea that a kid could be smart and also have dyslexia is something that people run into not understanding, and that if you're doing well in school, then there's no possible way that you could have dyslexia.
Right.
That's another misconception. The idea that if you have dyslexia, you can't read is also not true. Some people think that more boys will have dyslexia, and we can talk about that a little bit more later.
Okay.
And then just that you wouldn't, another myth would be that you wouldn't pick up on it until they're actually trying to learn to read, where there are signs way before that. So
yeah, important. I think you have mentioned that to me just in passing when we've had conversations too, that that is true. So is the root cause of dyslexia the use of the wrong side of the brain to read and spell, the right hemisphere then instead of the left?
This is so complicated, and I am not a neuroscience and I'm not a scientist, and I'm not going to pretend to be one. But if I were to explain to you how it works when I think about it, the left side of our brain is responsible for reading and writing and language components. And fMRIs are really at the cutting edge right now of being able to look at brains. And for a while, they had to use people who had passed away, who had dyslexia. So they couldn't look at a live brain. But now they can look at people who have dyslexia, people who don't have dyslexia, and they can compare the left side of the brain with both people, and they can see the differences. And what's really interesting is they can also then compare a child with dyslexia who has had specific instruction in learning to read and those who haven't, and they can also see that how the brain is being rewired in the process.
Interesting.
It's really amazing, and I wish my brain could handle learning more about it.
Yes.
Because it's complicated, but it's really cool.
I'm going to go back really quick. You said fMRI, and just for our listeners, that stands for functional MRIs. And what's going on with most people probably are familiar with an MRI. You know, that's one of the ways that we look at the brain, where you go into the tube, but with a functional, you're able to stay awake and you're given instruction while you are in that MRI tube. And so then they can see what parts of the brain are being used given whatever the stimuli is that they ask you to repeat or to answer. And so that's what the functional piece is.
Exactly.
So I think it's important for people to understand how they're able to learn this information about people with dyslexia while they're still, as you said, alive and walking the earth.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah. Thank you.
The brain, I'll tell you, it's quite a complex member of the body, isn't it?
Yes, it is very complex.
You know, at the very beginning, we mentioned some of the statistics as they pertain to dyslexia. You also, in the first question, talked about some of the things that dyslexia is and isn't. But I'd also like to take a look at maybe what some of the facts are about dyslexia.
Sure. The first would be that children with dyslexia may have reversals, but not all children and adults with dyslexia have reversals when they're writing. They don't always mix up their B's and their D's or their P's and their G's and their Q's, but it is a marker for it. So to understand that it's not just a sure sign, because for some children, it's just in the learning process, they haven't mastered the B and the D. And so it can still be there, but not have dyslexia. Does that make sense?
That's good to know, actually, because I think that is one that is always assumed. If you see those reversals, then there must be dyslexia present.
Sure. And I think to answer that, I would say, well, let's treat it like maybe there is going to be a problem down the road and work systematically to try to correct it as early as we can. That's the best way to look at it.
Okay.
All people can have dyslexia. That's another fact. It doesn't matter your socioeconomic background, your race, your gender. Everyone falls into the category of being able to have dyslexia, but it is a genetic compound. It is related genetically, and that's something where these fMRIs are also looking into that, and scientists are looking into the chemical background of dyslexia as well. It's so fascinating to me.
Chemical. A chemical. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
But I guess that's really what our brains are made up of, is chemicals that are working in synapses and what have you. So, interesting.
A couple more facts. People with dyslexia can do well in school, and they often do if they've had the correct instruction. So that's why that is so important. And both males and females equally, just about equally, will have dyslexia. It is interesting, though, that often more boys are referred for an assessment than females, and we can talk about that, too, if you want. Reading is based on our spoken language. And early intervention is best. That is a fact. Yes.
Yeah, let's touch on that. Why are boys more often referred for evaluation than dyslexia?
I'm curious too. You know, when I read that statistic, what's aligned with that is often boys are busier in the classroom and they're more active, and maybe they are just not picking up on what they're supposed to be learning academically in the same, I don't know, pace as the girls around them. So they may look like they're not doing as well, but I think that's why they're often referred
more. Interesting. But when it comes to actual diagnosis, you're saying that it really is pretty equal, amongst boys and girls. Oh, that is very interesting. So more referrals for the boys, but equal presence in the girls and boys. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. So I know we talked about some of the myths surrounding dyslexia a little while ago. I don't know if there's any others that you wanted to make sure that you covered before we move on. I know when you talk about reversals, I sometimes think of reversals as being like writing things backwards, but I guess that's different than a reversal. Reversal would be like a B for a D or a P and a B.
It can happen. Yep.
But what about writing a three backwards or letters backwards? Is that something that would be a sign of dyslexia?
It can be, and both students at an early age might do it. But if a child is dyslexic, I do see that. If they're reversing letters, they're also reversing numbers. And it's often both in the reading aspect, where they'll look at the word dog and they'll say bog, and that's just a sign to me that, okay, they've got the picture of the B and the D in their mind, but they haven't figured out which sound is associated with the visual component of it.
Okay. And I bet that's where some of your training comes in.
Yeah.
So when you say, like, you know, the dyslexia could be present there, are you looking for a pattern of, say, like, multiple letters consistently, or could it just be one letter or two letters?
It comes and it goes, and it's not always the case. I mean, for my students that I work with, some days they don't make any reversals, and other days it's just however their brains are firing that day, right? But at an early sign or early age, a sign would be just not being able to figure out those letters and P's and Q's looking like the same letter to them, and the G, and how they go to then write them on paper is also difficult for them. And there are strategies then for helping them to be able to write them the right way too.
Right, so, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned that often gifted people are dyslexic. And why is that the case?
You know, the more I spend time with people who have dyslexia, I just realize how brilliant they are. And I think they just think outside of the box, if you want to look at it that way. They see the world differently. When things that are so small are difficult, every little letter was difficult, every little sound maybe was difficult for them, they start to see the big picture of things. So I often see many of my students with dyslexia being problem solvers, or after getting through text, to be able to just pinpoint exactly what it was that it was about. And they don't just get caught up on the details. And I just find that fascinating.
That is very interesting. Yep. And I bet it would almost take some functional MRI work to find out what came first. You know, did they develop that skill as a result of having struggled with dyslexia? Or is that just the way their brains are?
I think both.
It's both.
They really do. Huh. Yeah. And sometimes the auditory skills for students who getting through text is so difficult. It could be both, but they learn to really pay attention and listen, and they process things very well when things are spoken or they're listening to it. And it doesn't line up to when they're trying to just get through text through reading it on their own. So is that a result of it, or is it just that, like you're saying, that's a coping mechanism that's become strengthened because they rely on it?
Yeah. Very interesting.
Yep.
Okay. Well, we mentioned the often and the gifted people that are dyslexic. I know you brought in a list of some famous people whose minds were wired for greatness, but wired differently at the same time. Who might some of those people be?
Oh, I just love this. And I love sharing this with kids who do have dyslexia, because when they know these names, they're just like, oh, really?
Yeah. I'm in the same category as that person.
I know, and it's true. Albert Einstein, Winston Churchill. Nelson Rockefeller, Thomas Alva Edison, going down the list, Leonardo da Vinci. Just think about thinking outside of the box. There's some actors, Henry Winkler, the Fonz. He's also an author today, and he writes some great children's books about a boy who does have dyslexia. And
really?
I love that. Yep. The late Robin Williams, Tom Cruise, a few musicians out there like Cher. Let's see. Jay Leno. Y'all know Jay Leno if you've watched any late night TV. And Paul Wellstone, a U.S. senator.
Yeah.
Also, he is another one.
The late Paul Wellstone.
The late Paul Wellstone, yes. Yep.
So I know that these famous people were obviously, or their teachers were unfamiliar with the facts and myths concerning dyslexia. I'm assuming they've obviously been diagnosed post-mortem on the basis of how they were discussed by their teachers and that type of thing. But share with us some of the comments that concerning some of those report cards for these students before they did become famous. What are some of the comments that we heard from those teachers?
Hans Christian Andersen, a children's author, he was noted to be a poor speller. but it didn't keep him from writing books.
Right. Isn't that amazing?
I love that. Henry Ford also was a poor speller. George Bernard Shaw, who is known for writing music. Other poor readers and spellers, that's what it said on their report cards. Once again, Woodrow Wilson and Nelson Rockefeller. Shows no promise was a comment.
About Nelson Rockefeller?
For Abraham Lincoln.
Oh my goodness.
Yep, also Henry Ford. Thomas Edison was at the bottom of his class.
Wow.
And this one makes me sad, but Albert Einstein, it was written that he was mentally slow.
Wow.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, some of those things.
And we have the theory of relativity from Albert Einstein.
The study of something, you know, yes. Small particles, very small.
Right.
He's still able to do that. And his
And see the
IQ.
Big picture, too.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Estimated 160 IQ.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Unbelievable.
Well, you know, we felt this was a good time to share these testimonies of these famous people. You know, we want to reiterate again that having dyslexia is not an indication of lack of intelligence or motivation. It doesn't signify any laziness or lack of drive. We just can't stress this enough, so we really hope this encourages our listeners as they hear this piece. Well, we're going to take a very short break here on Education Nation. When we come back, we will discuss early signs of dyslexia, specific signs your children may be exhibiting up to the fourth grade, how dyslexia affects learning, and how it manifests at different times in life. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Education Nation. I'm your host, Rebecca Hagstrom, and I'm joined here with my co-host, Mark Durkin, and LCA Learning Specialist, Sherilee Marsh. And we want to spend the rest of today's show discussing the early signs of dyslexia and how it affects learning. So, Sherilee, what are some of the early signs of possible dyslexia, and how old are children when these signs begin to emerge?
Right when kids are starting to learn to talk, often kids who end up having dyslexia, when you're in that process of diagnosis, you find out that they were slow to talk in the beginning. They were slow to speak, talked later than most other children their age. Often little children will say things like "basketti" for spaghetti, or instead of lawnmower, it could be "monlower." And they feel it, and they look at you like, I didn't say it right, and I know it, but I'm not sure what I said. You know, those little things, which oftentimes parents think are cute.
Yeah.
And sometimes they are. But when you try to correct them, and they still, you know, those are just some little signs. Sometimes children at a young age will be slow to develop their vocabulary, or will have trouble with understanding abstract things. I've noticed that too, or just like idioms that we use, phrases that we use that are confusing.
That goes along with dyslexia. Did not know that.
Yeah. Also, when they're trying to explain something to you, they seem like that word is just on the tip of their tongue and they just can't quite express it the way they want to, and they're frustrated at an early age. Dr. Seuss books or other fairy tales, nursery rhymes, that's what I'm trying to say, that end with rhymes. Those are often difficult for kids to predict. Like if you say, Old Mother Hubbard went to the cupboard to get her poor dog a bone when she came home. You know, those rhymes, when they have a very easy rhyme in them, are often hard for kids to predict what that rhyme might be. I've seen that. But then also just playing games with rhyming is difficult for kids. If I say cat, you say bat, you say sat, you say mat, and that's tricky for them. They don't hear that rhyme of the at part of that word.
They don't hear the similarities.
And then at an early age, when you're working on the days, the weeks, the months of the year, it just seems hard to remember that vocabulary and keep it straight. Also then along with that are your colors and your shapes, and counting objects and recognizing that number 3 is a 3 and that number 1 is a 1. And then also in the beginning, when they're first starting to write in school, just being able to write their letters, it's hard. It's hard to learn to do that. Another thing that parents will find at home is when you give your child a few directions, like, please go upstairs, and I want you to put on your pajamas, and then I want you to brush your teeth, and then you're going to get in bed, and I'm going to come read you a story. often children who have dyslexia, they get lost in that process, and they might get one of those things done or just none of it. And that's another sign that parents often tell me they notice at an early age. Kids who struggle with our language often have a hard time maybe telling a story in the order of its events. They might start to tell you the story in the middle and use pronouns and you don't know what they're talking about.
Or context.
Yeah, I've noticed that too without the context. It's in their mind. They know what they're trying to tell you, but to articulate it is difficult for them. Mm-hmm. And then when kids are first learning to spell and they're starting to blend sounds together, that can be very difficult. And that's a sign as well at an early age in that preschool when they're starting to build those beginning words like cat and sat and man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to stop you there for just
Please.
A second. You mentioned something about, you know, if a child says Paschetti, it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's actually one of the things mm-hmm. that my kids did. I think it's a pretty mm-hmm. common
yeah.
Mispronunciation. So if I were a parent listening to this, I would think, my child mm-hmm. says Paschetti. So mm-hmm. that means, do they have dyslexia? So mm-hmm. how
no.
do you respond to
no.
that?
I usually, you know, look at these things once they're older and they've come in for a diagnosis and I'm then working with them, that's something that the parents recognize, they did that when they were little. Mm-hmm. You know, I too, as a parent, my oldest son didn't say chocolate, he said chalocolate. And we still say that in our family because it's cute.
Uh-huh.
So I don't want parents panicking.
Right.
But
good.
As kids get older, if they still are having that difficulty, you know, remembering it's a lawnmower and they just mess it up, lawnmower, mm-hmm. you know, when you've tried to correct it and it's not taking place, that, you know,
that's
the fixing
when,
of it, that's when you can
okay.
be concerned
okay.
about it.
I just
yep.
wanted to clarify that because
so
I know that
yep.
that not every child that
exactly.
has those mispronunciations
exactly.
is dyslexic.
Exactly.
So,
but even, you know, what we noticed at the preschool level is when they've spent an entire school year teaching kids their letters, whether it be the uppercase and the lowercase, and maybe they're writing them, maybe they're not. But it just seems for some of these children at that age that it's just overwhelming and they, you know, they just cannot seem to remember the names of those letters
mm-hmm.
with lots of instruction and it's still just mm-hmm. painful for them.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you mentioned an inability to recognize letters in one's own name as
mm-hmm.
well. And one of the myths that we mentioned earlier about dyslexia is seeing and writing letters backwards.
Mm-hmm.
So how then would it be difficult for children to not recognize those letters?
Think about how complicated the alphabet is. We have a symbol of lines and circles, mm-hmm. and we have 26 letters. But we have over 70 sounds that we can make with all those letters.
Mm.
And for a child first learning them, if they do have dyslexia, I mean, they can all look the same.
Mm.
And it can, you know, you look at that O and you look at that Q. Well, that looks like the same, but it just has a line attached. And until they have actually mastered those sounds or those letters and their names, it just looks like a mess to a lot mm-hmm. of kids. And it's mm-hmm. not necessarily a vision thing. It's just that it's complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so when we're talking about a child's name, that's probably the first word that they were ever exposed to in writing.
Yes.
'Cause parents label everything, you know, and they have their name written on every item. You know, when they first start going to preschool, most preschools that I've had experience with, kids walk in and they find their name and they put it in the cup to signify I'm here today.
Mm-hmm.
And for kids that have a hard time finding their own name, to me, that's a sign that I know you've been exposed to your name
mm-hmm.
a long time and it's still not clicking.
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
that's a sign to me.
Very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, once the signs begin to emerge before kindergarten, could you share with us, you know, how the initial signs begin to build into larger challenges, especially the signs that emerge from kindergarten through the fourth grade and even beyond the fourth grade?
Mm-hmm. So in kindergarten, the goal is that you would truly learn your letters, you learn their sounds, and you would learn how we start to build words. You would learn that through spelling those words and then eventually writing a small sentence. Maybe not necessarily the end of kindergarten, but the idea that sounds are built into words and then words can be put together to make sentences, that's the goal of the kindergarten language experience. Vocabulary starting to be built, rhyming, all those things are a part of a kindergarten class. And for a kid who is struggling with that, right away to intervene and just focus on teaching those letters at the pace that they need them taught. And then with the sounds, later we can talk about that and how I do that or how teachers do that. But in kindergarten, that's the bulk of it. So if you've got kids that are struggling with that, we just need to slow it down and teach them at the pace that they need to be taught.
Mm-hmm.
So then as you get into first grade and really true reading is going to start to take off. And it's so fun to watch a child grow from the beginning of first grade until the end of first grade, where at the beginning of first grade, they're reading at cat. Mm-hmm. You know, p-i-g. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, it's like that. And then at the end of the year when they are reading so many words, mm-hmm. and for a first grade teacher to watch that first month, you know, even just from the first to the second month, the growth that can take place in reading. And when teachers who understand how our words are built and how kids are learning to read, when they can see that it's just not taking place, once again, it's just time to intervene and mm-hmm. to try something different.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So then as you go on in the upper grades to get up into third and fourth grade, it just continues to get more difficult for kids if they are falling behind. If they're still stuck on that word of k-at and they're sounding out every word, right. comprehension's not taking place. So if they're reading books and every word is difficult, you know, they're not going to be understanding what's right. going on. Mm-hmm. And then writing what they're truly understanding, and it's mm-hmm. difficult. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So now that we understand the specific ways of how dyslexia affects learning, please give our listeners, if you could, some examples of how it manifests itself at different times in life. So mm-hmm. you mentioned that only 2 million out of 40 million adults are diagnosed with right. dyslexia, even though 40 million actually have it.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
tell us what that looks like then in older students and adults.
Sure. Because we've talked about how high intelligence is lined up with people who have dyslexia, those who are on the minor spectrum of dyslexia, they often can slide through. It might have been difficult to learn those letters and sounds, but they kind of kept up with their peers. But as they get into the writing component, and as text gets more difficult, as they get into texts that aren't as predictable, like science texts, often those middle grades, the kids start to stand out more that have often slid through. And you'll see it in their writing where it's just not organized in the right way. And words that you would assume they would be able to spell, the little words like to and at or and or mm-hmm. where and were, those are often confused. Those are some of the signs in the middle grades.
Okay.
And then also just having organization issues mm-hmm. across the board. I see a lot yeah. of kids who struggle with that, and also struggle then with planning for their writing. Or just processing what they've read and being able to produce that after they've read.
Okay. Yeah. So, okay. Yep. Good.
Well, we only have about 45 yep. seconds, but
wow.
It's a lot of information to digest
so
in a short period of time.
Yeah.
But you wanted to end the segment on a positive and encouraging note.
I really do.
Sally Shaywitz from the Yale Center for Dyslexia and Creativity. She wrote a book titled Overcoming Dyslexia. Could you just share some of the encouraging quotes that you selected from that book?
I would love to. Sally Shaywitz writes, "Children and adults with dyslexia are highly creative and have many cognitive and emotional strengths, despite a weakness in decoding words. Successful dyslexics draw on their strengths to hit their targets in life. One thing we know for certain about dyslexia is that this is one small area of difficulty in a sea of strengths. Having trouble with reading does not mean that you'll have trouble with everything. In fact, most kids with dyslexia are very good at lots of other things."
It's really great to be able to end on that quote. And that is really all the time that we have for this week's episode of Education Nation. Please join us again next week for part two of our interview on dyslexia with Sherilee Marsh. Sherilee will share with us the specific actions parents can take if they suspect dyslexia. She'll also spend time discussing how you, the parents, can acquire training to help your children thrive and grow. See you next week.